Education Finance Committee will come to order, and I sense the spring is in the air and Easter around the corner. So we have a very tight time frame this morning because of caucus that was supposed to take place at 10:30. So here's how I'd like to suggest, and I hope more members come fairly quickly. What I'd like to do is we have one bill today, which is the bill that came from Senator Wieger's Education Policy Committee, and the tracking of that bill went from the Education Policy Committee to the State and Local Government Committee to, I believe, Higher Education, and then it has come here. And so what I would suggest would be that we would go through the whole bill and then take questions and have testimony on whatever part of that proposal that members and the public would be interested in. So rather, and the reason for that is to try to get through the bill itself, and then there will be an opportunity next week when we actually assemble the education bill to take additional amendments if members have, or if there's amendments to be offered. And there will be some time, hopefully, after Senator Wieger goes through the bill to address amendments or take questions or whatever. But I do would like to get through it and start working at doing whatever we want to do with it. And I'm kind of hemming and hawing here so that more members would come because I.
Mr. Chair, do we need to go back to more members?
Well, it's not so much for the quorum, but I want to set the tone for what this committee's challenge is. And last week, after Senator Wieger, you heard this legislation. I sent all of you a letter or an email, and the email basically kind of laid out several points. And one of them, or I want to just touch on all three of those points. The session hinges around a fairly large deficit, and that deficit is, you know, now $935 million. And so the challenge of this session is to try to balance the budget and do that in a fashion that we hope can be acceptable and agreeable to a majority of people. There's a lot of ideas that members have had, which are spending ideas, and I just want to say that it's going to be very difficult to try to accommodate a lot of the spending items that members have suggested. Obviously, to a large extent, where last night the budget chairs met, and we have some of them here. We're trying to figure out, where do we come up with the $935 million to balance the budget? The way I laid out the proposal was that, you know, items that cost money are going to be a challenge, like I mentioned. If we just reflect for a little bit on what the school districts are going through across the state, many of those school districts are cutting budgets, and some of them quite significantly reducing budgets. And so I think it's wise for us, or for this committee, to think about additional mandates and additional costs that we would expect, you know, to put on to school districts when they're in a very, very tight budget as well out there. And so I would look at or hope that this committee would look very responsibly on mandates that we are going to, you know, might pass. And then I think if it's, you know, there's a number of things in here that are strictly policy that don't have a cost. And so I think we have to look at those kind of on their own face value, as Senator Wieger has done in his committee. And finally, I want to thank Senator Wieger for the good work that he has done in his committee. And there is one proposal that I would hope that all of the committee members would look very, you know, kindly on. I think there's one thing that we could do as a committee if we all kind of agree on it, and that is to take and do the trust fund transfer. Somehow, if we can do that trust fund transfer later on when we talk about this, you'll see that it's an excellent way to move a few dollars. It's not a large amount, and what they're handing out now is that a spreadsheet which would indicate what districts would receive if we did this. And one of the most important reasons for doing it this year is to capture that growth in the school trust fund for the future. This is a major piece, and I again want to thank Senator Wieger for his efforts in moving that along and being a real part in that. So I would hope that members, as we go through the bill and start assembling the budget bill, even though things are tight, that we could look, you know, kindly on that. And I think that would be a big piece for this legislative session to help our schools across the state. Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we're going over Senator Wieger's bill. If there's portions that, because we've talked with Mr. Nauman or whatever, and think that there's some fiscal implications and think that we take those out, should we do those as we're going through, or should we wait till next week?
Senator Saxog, I would suggest that you mark it up in your copy, and then we address those after he goes through the whole bill.
Okay.
That way, I think we'll move along a little bit quicker, if that's all right. All right. Any questions? Yeah, and that would include amendments too, if you have amendments. Let's go through the proposal and then kind of make notations in the side or in the pair or in the alongside or whatever you would like. Senator Wieger, welcome.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and division members. The Omnibus Education Policy Bill contains about 100 recommendations. And these recommendations come from you. They come from subcommittee work that has been performed over the past several months by the Education Committee, subcommittee groups. Oftentimes, these groups would work with House members as well. And there were many meetings, not only in the metro area, but in other parts of the state. There are, in the bill, 100 recommendations or so, but 50 or so of these recommendations I would put in the category as not having an impact on budget, strictly policy. And there's another section that I'll get to, but just to give you the big picture, there's several task forces, work groups, and rather than going and addressing one from time to time in my presentation, I want to refer to all of them and give some thoughts. But on task forces, there would be at least two that I recommended for continuation, possibly a third one, and then there's 11 or 12 new ones. But dollars would be attached. So the first 50 or so would be policy recommendations, many of them non-controversial, most from the Department of Education. And then when we get into task force work groups, a couple of them should not have an impact, but 11 or so would, depending on the final language. And then a third area that I'd characterize the bill would be policy recommendations that have a fiscal impact. And that's, you know, Mr. Chair, where you've given the thoughtful advice that we have to be very careful with the deficit. But as you all know, this is also a time where we define our priorities. And we have several recommendations addressing policy, and there would be dollars attached. I'd like to just comment in general on some of those before we get into the bill. For those policy initiatives that would have dollars attached. Overall, the committee feels very strongly about early education, preschool opportunities, particularly students that are at risk. When we look at the dropout rate, when we look at the need for remediation, not only in high school but in college, 40% of students in Minsk-U needing math, as well as a disturbing number just for reading, writing. We've done a lot of study, and it gets right back to early childhood, and we address that in the bill and in a bipartisan way. But there's money. But I want to give you some of the key values that I see coming from our education policy committee meetings. Another is early intervention and identifying problems that a student may have and then getting on a remedial track to correct that. Senators Saltzman and Senator Olson have worked a great deal in this area, and you'll see discussion on that. When I mentioned the early childhood opportunities, Senator Bonoff and Senator Michelle have co-authored and have worked together in co-chairing the subcommittee, as well as Senator Clark having provisions in the bill. We also had provisions on safety when you're taking the bus to school, and we've already passed those, and they're in the transportation bill, but we spent a great deal of time through Senator Olsen and Senator Jungbauer addressing that. In addition to the early childhood, the preschool, the early intervention, we feel very strongly about rigorous academic requirements and reporting meaningful information to the public. Senator Rummel has done an incredibly great job in addressing this, has worked so hard in co-chairing a subcommittee with Senator Erickson Ropes and also working with colleagues in the House on that. And you're going to see a number of recommendations later on that. But these are priorities that we highly value. Senator Torres Ray has worked with Senator Erickson Ropes as well, and it's Senator Lynch that co-chaired the group with Senator Rummel. The achievement gap, perhaps the top issue facing education in America right now, including our state, and what we can do to narrow that gap. Senator Torres Ray, Senator Erickson Ropes have put together suggestions that you'll see here. Areas of technology are also addressed. Senator Carlson worked with Senator Jungbauer. Senator Hahn worked on on a number of these proposals as well, particularly on the school bus safety. Technology proposals will be included. We realize that there are dollar implications for many of these items, but that doesn't mean there's a moratorium necessarily on us moving ahead on at least some of them, and that will be the challenge as we do the markup. So, Mr. Chair, I last night, actually, thinking about the memo you gave us, I prepared a memo, and I asked the clerk to make a copy of that, and if she could distribute it to the committee. What it does, Mr. Chair, you had told committee members that they might want to just make a mark in the margin or something as to whether there might be a fiscal impact. This memo highlights in three sections those provisions in the omnibus bill that would be policy with no dollars. It would secondly identify task forces, work groups, and then thirdly, it would have those policy recommendations with a fiscal impact or a mandate that would give rise to further questions. So I'll ask that that be distributed. And if I could, I'd like to go to the basic policy recommendations that don't have the dollars attached. And in the handout, and if we could go to Article 1, you'll see many recommendations, starting at sections 1 to 10 that come from the Department of Education. Often these are non-controversial references that strike obsolete references in statute. And you have a summary of the bill, I believe, from Senate Research and Counsel on this, but I have the department staff available for several of the provisions to the extent that you'd like to go in it. But overall, Article 1, Sections 1 to 10 and 13 to 14 would be policy recommendations without fiscal impact. And I would stand for questions on Article 1 for non-fiscally related questions, but there would be questions. Otherwise, I would go to Article 2 for policy recommendations that do not have a fiscal impact. And of course, we could go back as well. At Article 2, Sections 1, 6, Part 7, and 8 and 9 again, from the Department of Education. Section 2 in Article 2 is a proposal from Senator Rummel, and it addresses world-class schools, and it's a vision statement that we would have in Minnesota statute. And this was the work of a group that the school administrators, superintendents, and many other groups joined in signing in a document called Minnesota's Promise. But that is in the policy with no fiscal impact. Section 19 in Article 2 is from Senators Saltzman and Olson regarding comprehensive scientifically based reading instruction and would clarify a definition. There's other parts later that get into fiscal impact, but on the non-fiscal, Section 19 from Senators Saltzman and Olson on the definition. Sections 20 and 21 from the Department of Education. Section 22 is from Senator Pappas, again a policy recommendation. Sections 26 and 27 from the Department of Education on staff development programs. Sections 30 to 32 and 34 come from Senator Saxhog, I believe, and addresses definitions of post-secondary enrollment options. And again, there is not a fiscal impact. We've had a policy discussion in committee if there's a need for further discussion here. But again, we've been told there's not a fiscal note on that. Sections 40 to 43 and 45 to 46 in Article 2 relate to charter schools with not having a fiscal impact. Those are brought by the Department of Education. And they been working with various stakeholder groups, whether there's full agreement to be determined, but it comes from the Department of Education. Section 44, again, a non-fiscal policy item, is from Senator Saltzman, I believe, on leaves to teach in a charter school. Section 48 is from the Department of Education on technology data and guidelines. Senator Bonhoff may have had a related provision as well on that. Section 51 on pre-advanced placement, advanced placement, et cetera. It just provides some carryover language. It's from the department, non-controversial. Section 60, reading instruction rules, again, a part of the Saltzman and Olson package, but without a fiscal impact. Section 65 is a revisor instruction from the Department of Education. Continuing with policy recommendations without fiscal ramifications, in Article 3, Section 1, it's from the Department of Education on 30 days after school starts for a notification to parents on provisions noted. Section 2, I believe, is from Senator Lynch on permitting licensed physicians or licensed psychologists to make a diagnosis and determination on attention deficit disorder. Sections 3-7 are from the Department of Education. In Article 4, Section 1 from the Department, as well as Sections 3-5, and again, these are items that do not have a financial impact and have been reviewed by the committee. Section 6 in Article 4 is a proposal from Senator Lynch regarding the electronic library for Minnesota, and allows all libraries access to that library for Minnesota databases, regardless of whether they're a member of the regional library system. And two remaining articles for policy non-fiscal impact, Article 5, Sections 5 and 6 relate to unreimbursed costs and third-party reimbursement from the Department of Education. And Sections 9, resolution on school board elections, and Section 10, that's from Senator Saxhog, regarding primary elections, and there's similar legislation on the floor, and it's been discussed in previous sessions. Again, not a fiscal impact and very familiar to this committee. And finally, for the group of about 50 policy bills without fiscal impact in Article 6, Section 2, a school readiness goal that would ensure that 75% of Minnesota children are school ready by 2012. This comes from Senators Bonhoff and Michelle. Senator Clark have all worked together on early childhood initiatives, and it sets a goal and statute on readiness. Sections 3-5 are from the Department of Education. Section 7 on adult basic education, supplemental service grants from the Department of Education, and Senator Torres Ray had an amendment affecting that, which you would have. And finally, in Section 9 on the Gen Ed GED test fees, and that's from the Department of Ed. So on the first part on policy without the fiscal impact, which has been reviewed by our committee, that is a part of the bill, and would stand for questions and also ask for additional witnesses if needed on any of those provisions. Otherwise, it would be my intent to go to the recommendations on the various task forces and work groups.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. You identified those items that would be classified as policy. Maybe that'd be a good point where we could maybe take some questions on on that particular area, and then move on to what would be either a mandate or a cost item. I had a question, two questions actually. One going back to, I believe it was Article 2, Section, I'm not sure if it's Section 2, Article 2, Section 2.
It'd be a Minnesota's Promise?
Yeah, and the question was actually brought up by the department. And the department, let me see if I can frame it. The, you know, most of us have kind of frowned a little bit on purpose clauses and kind of vision of the future type, you know, statements that maybe don't really, shouldn't really be in statute. And the concern that they had was by putting this in statute, first of all, it doesn't do anything in the sense that it's not, it doesn't effectuate anything. But the negative thing that they pointed out is that the state's liability could be affected in the future if one or other of these points would become an issue. And so I just bring that up for the committee's discussion. And I think if there if there was a place for, let's say, a purpose area or a vision area, but we don't seem to have that, you know. But maybe that's what our resolutions on the floor are. But Senator Hand.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your raising that question. I frankly had some of the same question myself. And I guess, you know, you look at some of the provisions, the one on page 15, number 7, for example, that says that we have in statute ensuring schools are provided with funding that is predictable and sufficient. I don't know if I know exactly what those things mean, but I'm not sure I would want to have the court tell us what they mean either. And I'm a little concerned about, I think it's good to have some sense of purpose and vision for education. I'm not so sure that putting this in statute might not lead us into areas we may not want to go, or at least go willingly. And so I guess I'm kind of troubled by whether we ought to leave it in statute or pass it as a separate resolution or something might be more appropriate.
Okay. Senator Wieger?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to yield to the author on that provision, Senator Rummel, and I had mentioned that this was the work of a group, the superintendents, administrators, and a coalition, just asking that we share a vision to the state as to what do we stand for, what are the expectations, and to give us a roadmap. But Senator Rummel, if you'd like to address the points.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On committee, the coalition, and it was more than educators, it included such organizations as the United Way, did a lot of research. And the states that were succeeding in closing the achievement gap and making significant changes, and Massachusetts would be one of them, were the states that actually put into statute a plan. This is the sketch of a plan of the elements that it would take for us to have the kind of education that is going to realize the expectations we have. And so that's why we brought it forward. It was something that we would work at and reflect on year by year so that we're not hopping around and doing the Band-Aid approach to education policy that we've been doing in the past.
Senator Olson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think the term that is probably should make one nervous is that in virtually every line is the word ensure. And that's a pretty high standard of behavior that if we are not, in fact, pursuing in all of these cases, and some of them are, you know, quite challenging. Not that we shouldn't be challenged or be challenging ourselves, but I think that that's probably the term, regardless of what area you're talking about, that one could suggest that there may be some liability concerns in the future.
Okay. Senator Salzman.
On that same point, Mr. Chair, as Senator Hans said, I know that in business, industry, and jobs that Senator Anderson is working with Cap and Trade, and again putting together some ideas of a vision or recommendations of how that program may be instituted, and that it's being considered as a resolution so that we don't lose it, but to actually put it into statute. So I just offer that as I would hate to lose this, because I think there was a lot of thought put into it, but how can we have perhaps a way for us to help guide us to remember these things as we go forward with our policy in the future. So I would suggest that maybe if we are, if this is at risk of being deleted entirely, that we save it in some form, at least as a resolution.
Here's my suggestion, and I got one eye on the clock and one eye on members, that we won't resolve that today. I mean, just think about all these issues, and I think maybe that's the way we ought to approach it, so that we can actually get through your whole bill, and then members, next Thursday we're going to have both a morning session and an evening session, so that on this, or actually it'll be on the whole package, and then on Wednesday I'll have an opportunity to go over, you know, a little bit with both caucuses. Keep your ideas, write notes or whatever, and so that if you have suggestions or ideas or amendments, they can be taken up. The other one I just want to go to I guess I can wait. Was there any other discussion on this kind of policy area? Otherwise, we'll ask Senator Wieger to kind of move on to the Senator Hahn.
Mr. Chairman and Member Senator Wieger, I guess I wanted to address what you have in your sheet, Section 22, which I believe is the provision that we have the separate.
Could you give the page, Senator?
Well, it's I don't think it's been engrossed. I think it's shown here as a separate amendment. But I understand that this was adopted yesterday and incorporated into the bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, I do plan on addressing that when we get to the third category of bills. And this is
that does have a cost.
Yes, there's a cost, so that's why we distinguished. And I hope this was helpful for members by putting it in these categories.
All right, Senator Wieger.
Okay. Going next to the second categorization for task force and work groups, there's at least 13 or 14, and a couple of them are continuations. And so if I went to Article 2, Section 38, the department.
Can you just give the page? It might be a little quicker.
But it's on the bottom. It
says page 50.
Oh, no. I will have to look up the page,
51.
Actually.
So it's
page
it shows
51.
On the bottom of the page.
Right. 51, thank you. Article 2, Section 38 from the department would continue the Online Learning Advisory Council. Non-controversial, I believe. Section 39 would continue the Charter School Advisory Council. And there should not be a fiscal impact. There's also a reference in that same article at Section 56 to the Charter School Advisory Council. And we had a late entry that's not on here, but Senator Scheid introduced legislation to continue the Special Ed Task Force, and I certainly wouldn't be opposed if there was an amendment later when this is marked up to continue the work of that group, but that would be an existing group. We did not have time to hear that proposal, but I wanted to lay that out as another one that's pre-existing.
Senator Koch, if members can just hold their questions, but do you want to ask yours?
Well, specifically on those two sections.
Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Edlinow.
Senator
Wieger, the Online Learning Advisory Council, I'm just noticing, and the Charter School Advisory, there's a sunset with the Online Learning Advisory Council, which makes sense. I mean, it's nice to check in with them. But I'm noticing on the Charter School Advisory Council, there is no sunset now. We're actually deleting, well, there's an old sunset, which we're deleting, which is great. But then we actually make it so there is no sunset, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts were there. I kind of like the idea of checking in with these guys and making sure that it's working, and is there a reason for the difference?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cloak, that was the recommendation, and I know we have options, and we can always change that status of being permanent if we want, but it was the recommendation that it be permanent.
I believe, Senator Wieger, this was from the department?
Yes, the department.
Would you like to?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Government Relations with the Department of Education. And I do want to clarify, the department did put forward a recommendation to repeal the expiration of the Charter School Advisory Committee. The Online Learning Advisory Committee wasn't a recommendation of ours, but we don't have any concerns with it, but it wasn't included in our original policy bill. And perhaps Senate Counsel could assist me. If there's not a specific sunset, is there another statutory provision that would apply to any sort of task force or advisory committee?
Mr. Chair and members, the provision on the charter school does refer to that section statute and says that that section doesn't apply to the Charter School Advisory Council. It excludes it makes so there is no expiration date on the Charter School Advisory Council.
Okay. It's just, Mr. Chair, so that's just
Cope.
Wide open. I mean, it continues for good.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cloak, yes, I believe the department would like to continue working with the Charter School Advisory Council on an ongoing basis.
Okay. All right, Senator.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Saxhog is the author for the Online Learning Advisory Council. The Department of Ed is not opposed to that. So,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Saxhog.
Well, I was just going to make a quick comment that, and it's our intention, because of some fiscal impacts, that we'll probably even sunset that in 2009 versus 2013. But we'll take care of that later.
Okay.
Right. Remember, members, to write your notes in the margins. Senator Wieger.
And members, there are several provisions calling for additional task forces and work groups. At Article 2, Section 18, Subdivision 3, Senator Resk would have a task force on environmentally sensitive cleaning and maintenance products. And
page
33.
And there was a significant amendment in the policy bill. Initially, it was going to be required that such products be used or that they weigh the feasibility. Now it's totally discretionary. So that was a significant impact. But we still have the task force in here. And again, on many of these, we don't have a fiscal, but I want you to be aware that this is one of those groups. Sections 52 through 54 are groups that Senator Rummel has proposed, and they address growth-based value-added systems, rigorous coursework measures, and a student survey that would be done. And this was the work of the subcommittee, which also had participation from the other body. Article 2, Section 57, from Senator Rummel, would create a group on world-class schools. Article 2, Section 62, Senator Torres Ray would have a task force on improving students' academic achievement, and this relates to the achievement gap work. Article 5, Section 7, would create additional duties for the Minnesota Technology Task Force, and I believe that was Senator Bonhoff. And Section 8 from myself, the P20 Education Partnership. I would note the P16 Council already exists and is built into their own budget. I believe there's a zero fiscal note from the department. I'm told that this morning. This would just have the legislature working with it, and that's what Section 8 is. Section 13 from Senator Tomasoni creates an advisory council on health, nutrition, PE. Section 14 from Senator Olson Mary creates a task force on teacher licensure and certification, and particularly looking at Dakota and Ojibwe language immersion programs. And in Article 6, Senators Bonoff, Michelle, Clark have worked to propose a state advisory board on school readiness. I did mention Senator Scheid's bill on special ed task force for the continuation of that. And earlier you made reference to the permanent school fund. Senator Lynch has worked very hard on the proposal that would have a group that would look at how we could get perhaps even a better bang for our dollar on the fund itself. But that proposal is in the Finance DNR division right now, but I want you to be aware that there's another entity out there as well that is still under review. So we have a number of proposals, and I think, Mr. Chair, the challenge you gave is, there is a cost on some, in fact, on most, and it's how you might want to look at other options in doing that. So those are the various task force work groups that have been recommended. Any questions? So the authors are at the table.
Some very busy beavers over the course of the session.
Mr. Okay. Chairman, when money's no Senator object Scheid. Or there's no money, it's kind of can do have the same result.
I mean, they really kind of cover the broad array of education policy, and it is amazing.
Mr. Chair, they take their job very seriously, as you know.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
And finally, Senator Mr. Chair, policy recommendations with fiscal implications. Sometimes it's very clear that there's going to be money needed. In other cases, it's because it's a mandate, one would argue there's going to be that impact. Article 1, Section 11 from Senator Saxhog addresses referendum language for the ballot. And page 21. And actually, Mr. Chair, I believe you did have some, you noted that in policy committee with some suggested changes, or at least we noted that. Page 8. Anyway, Article 1, Section 11, Senator Saxhog's provision. Article 1, Section 12, Senator Rummel has a provision. I believe that's her on lease purchase installment buys. Is that your Senator Rummel? Okay. We'll double check that, but sometimes that might be a part of other legislation. We may not know it's in there. It's the department's bill. Section 15 is the permanent school fund subtraction, and which we've heard in our committee before, and Senator Stumpf had some encouraging words at the start of today's meeting, so we'll see what happens.
Members, that was the school district printout runs that were handed out earlier. So.
Again, I thank you for that. It's very significant and what it could do for districts, and appreciate all the people that have worked on that. But there is that fiscal implication. Article 2, sections 3 to 5, and then there's some other related sections too, section 47, 49, and 66. And this all relates to the compulsory attendance in school. It's provision I offered, and it would increase the age to age 18. And we also had a provision in committee that said, right now you have to start at age 7, but if you, we had a change saying that if you did start in first grade, then you're in. Right now you could start in kindergarten and pull out if you want. We're not going to change that, but if you did start in first grade, then you're in the system. We have that in. The policy committee supported it, obviously, but there is a fiscal impact, I believe, of $9.5 million a year. And so it surprised me, members. So we have a built-in failure in our budget that we're going to have at least 11 or 12% fail in the system. And that's a best case, I guess, if we go by department figures for graduation rate. And some would say we have a graduation rate of 79%. But been a lot of discussion, you know, and we'll just put that on the side where I'd like to address it later. But there is a fiscal note if you are to stay in school. We had a lot of testimony, and this came actually when the superintendent of St. Paul, who was surprised when she came to our state that we would have an age 16 requirement. But that's one of those that has a purported fiscal impact. Section 7, Senator Thomas Soney in Article 2, would add health standards for the local school districts to develop. That has a fiscal impact. We had another one that didn't make it, but I'll note it in case there's a future amendment. Senator Chaudhry had recommendations on health or on outdoors education, made a very moving presentation on the legacy of the outdoors, but that was not included, but I understand there may be some proposals addressing that. Section 11, Subdivision 1, Senator Rummel has provision on testing. And in that same Subdivision 1A, I have a provision on science assessments in physical science, earth, and life. There was agreement on policy, but the fiscal impact, even though this is not for a few years, it apparently would be $3.2 million a year. So that's the reality. In Section 12, Subdivision 1, Senator Rummel has a section on educational accountability, and it's a part of her work on the report card. Additionally, Senator Rummel, in Sections 13 to 15, provisions addressing the student academic achievement and growth and report cards. There's fiscal impact. We don't have the, we discussed the merits policy-wise, but we don't have the fiscal. Sections 16 and 17, a proposal by Senator Marty that talks about school lockdown drills, which makes some provisions to alter that, that students actually have to be present, which makes sense. And also there's a provision regarding a fire marshal. I'm not sure what the fiscal impact is, but it was flagged, and so it's in that category. Section
Senator,
8.
Senator yes. Rieger, I think...
or perhaps as a mandate.
Yeah, I think that was a mandate, because I, although I do have... You know, I think you and I are reading off the same page. Originally, I think they were a cost, but I think they're classified more as a mandate.
Okay.
But it seems like it should the students should be present, you know, if you're going to do a fire drill.
Yes. But, you know, unfunded mandate, and so we put it in that category of, you know, that there might be a cost, because people argue that if it's a mandate and it's not funded, then there's a cost. But it's in that third silo that we're in now. Section 18 is from Senator Rest on the environmentally sensitive cleaning and maintenance products. And again, it's not mandated, but if there's a fiscal, would need to know that. But it's there at this point.
I believe, Senator Weaver, wasn't that the one that Senator Jungbauer was quite This is good for about a 2-hour speech on the floor. Yes.
Senator Rest Bill, and I brought it to her committee the next day, and all is fine.
Okay, Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, make that a 3-hour speech. I think we might disagree on what's environmentally safe.
Senator Wieger.
Okay, there's a new Section 18, and there'd be a recodification, but we're going to go with the second engrossment. Senator Hatton, as you pointed out, there was an amendment put in higher ed yesterday. I believe it's aligned to a new Section 18, and Senator Pappas offered an amendment on family life and sexuality education programs, grades 7 through 12. And that amendment is here. It hasn't been engrossed in this copy yet. That is before you. Basically, it's my understanding that a form of this bill has passed the Senate in 2004, in 2005, and in 2007. And this, earlier versions passed, actually had before seventh grade. This is beyond elementary, 7 through 12. A student can opt out of the program if the parents don't want their child in it. There's provisions in there for abstinence education and other items. We've had many hours of this debate, and Senator Pappas has offered this, but it was not heard in committee. It was put in higher ed.
Senator Hamm.
And Mr. Chairman, and I wanted to, I don't know if you're planning to do anything, any amendments today, or you want to wait till next week when we have a chance to, but I'm concerned about that, and Senator Wieger's right. We've had in past years some debate in committee on this, and it was going to be talked about the other evening, and I think just because of the fullness of the schedule, it was not discussed, and I know there were people that wanted to testify on that issue, and I guess, to be honest with you, I was a little bit put out to find out that it got stuck in a higher ed committee.
Thank you.
To me, does some violence to the idea that we have committees that are supposed to deal with certain policy things, and we should deal with them in those committees and not try to put things in bills that may not get the scrutiny that they deserve. And I think there are concerns about it, and I'm sure we've had plenty of discussion on it, but I think if we are contemplating doing some amendment, I would want to argue that we should take that out of the bill. And as I said, it's kind of, do you want to do that today, or do you want to do things next week, or what's your pleasure?
Senator Hand, I'd like to get through the bill, and if there's time after, then we could hear maybe some testimony from individuals, and then probably the best time would be on Thursday. We could probably get everything put together.
Okay. And all right. Thank you,
that
Mr.
way, that staff, I mean, individuals can work with the staff. And
sorry. So. And there is a fiscal note forthcoming. On that
yeah, there provision. Is a cost on that, too. So, all right, Senator Wieger.
Yes. Continuing in Article 2, Sections 23 to 25 would be from Senator Saltzman and Olson on reading instruction. There were amendments offered yesterday in higher ed, and we do have those for distribution as well, and they will be incorporated at some point.
Can you just mention what that amendment was?
Senator Saltzman, who worked so hard, and Senator Olson.
Certainly. Yes, Mr. Chair. What that amendment did is that it removed the language that will require this assessment to be part of relicensure for existing teachers. So that the intent now is to focus on an assessment just for pre-service teachers, and I do have another amendment at some point to introduce that reflects further work on this, which I think it's a work in progress, and we've tried to work with many different groups on this, so that would remove it. The other thing that in terms of a fiscal note, is that many times when these tests are developed, there is no fiscal note to the state, and that the cost of the test is part of the fee of taking the test, so there may or may not be a fiscal note on this particular provision.
Is Senator Saltzman, is the cost to the is this test before the Board of Teaching, or is it where is it?
Senator Self, in the amendment, we'll be addressing that we would suggest that the current reading instruction assessments really are not thoroughly assessing teachers' competency in this area, and so we have some language to ensure that future tests approved by the board would cover this specific area that we are most concerned about. And so it would be involved with the Board of Teaching, and that as they are looking at new reading standards, we've had some discussions about that and our concerns that the assessment really reflect what we believe needs to be evaluated in terms of teacher competency. So we're trying to work on some of the concerns that have been brought forward by the stakeholder groups.
Right. Senator Wieger?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sections 28 to 29, visions from Senator Dibble, and that addresses transportation contracts and school bus drivers, sets forth some new requirements, and would be in that mandate category. Fiscal implications, I don't have anything further on that, but it is flagged as an issue for that third group. Article 2.
Yes. Just a comment maybe on that. Wasn't the discussion that there was an ongoing department study on transportation? maybe we'll keep that in mind when we think about it. Okay. Senator Wieger.
Thank you. Article 2, Section 33 relates to post-secondary payments, and that may be Senator Saxhorg's bill. I just have it flagged as potential fiscal item, as well as sections 35 to 37 from Senator Saxhorg on online learning procedures. Article 2, Section 55 from Senator Rummel addresses the growth-based value-added system. Mentioned the work of her work group on that, but there would be implications. Same for sections 58 and 59 on reading instruction from Senators Saltzman and Olson. Section 61, Senator Torres Ray addresses school district plans to improve academic achievement, and it would set forth a survey with districts being asked to comply, and that would be in that mandate category as well, though Senator Torres Ray might want to look at some other language on that. Sections 63 to 64, brought to us by Senator Dahl, and that calls for a five-year pilot program for identifying improvement measures to best serve students in ALCs and charter schools, and it's there because of the financial implication. I believe it was a little over $100,000 year one and $200,000 or so year two. I believe he's working on some additional language, if that's my understanding, Senator Dahl. Okay. Article 4, Section 2 is from Senator Marty, and that addresses the qualification for the alternative facilities bonding and levy. And he had presented a situation in Roseville where they qualify, but if they were to dispose of some of that property, then they would no longer qualify, but there would be that fiscal impact if we did it statewide, or perhaps it could be narrowly crafted. Article 5, Sections 1 to 4, various gifted and talented programs. The need is there, but there would be ramifications for the budget, and I believe Senator Saltzman had a package on those proposals. In Section 11, I believe that's the computer adaptive assessment report. I believe that's Senator Rummel who may have had that. If not, that's in the provision in Article 5, Section 11 as a requirement. And Section 12 is from the similarly related. It's a Department of Education report that would have an impact. And to the final article on the Article 6 for policy with financial or mandate implications, Section 8 on ABE aid, Senator Torres Ray, I believe, had that provision. And I believe she's worked with the Department of Education on that, but we need a little more information. Sections 10 and 11 relate to the pupil unit counts for all-day kindergarten. And I believe Senators Bonoff, Michelle, Clark have all worked together on this. Senator Scheid certainly in the past as well. But the price tag is estimated at $90 to $110 million. Okay. But as I said initially when we talked about the biggest bang for our buck and early childhood readiness skills, et cetera, we're just kind of rehashing what the evidence is telling us. And but we're putting it here in this grouping because there is that fiscal impact and there'll be the chance. But I believe Senator Bonhoff had a point of emphasis, or
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just want to point out that the way that we did this is we actually just increased the formula to a 0.1, but we or to a 1, but we know that not all school districts can accommodate all day kindergarten at this time. So we actually have a provision that says if a school district at board discretion does not choose to use the money for that way, they could use that money for 3 and 4 year old programming. And we think that that gives school districts the flexibility while maintaining the focus on the youngest children, because I think in every district they have a different need and a different emphasis. So while we may not be able to get that done this year, I thought it was worth highlighting the approach.
And I think members, I think that there was a lot of interest, and I think there still is a lot of interest in trying to move our education system forward in terms of both early childhood and all-day kindergarten. I mean, I don't think there's anyone that wants to say that this is a bad place to invest money, invest education dollars. But as it seems like we can never quite get to the point where we have a sufficient amount of money to make that change.
Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Senator Chair, Scheid. Sections 12 and 13 in Article 6 relate to that.
Senator
as well.
Scheid.
Oh, excuse me. Mr. Chairman, I just think you said the word invest, and I wish we would look at it more of as an investment. I don't want to overuse the word, but that's what it truly is. And maybe we need to apply some kind of personal financial planning strategies to try to make this work. You know, it's really difficult. We can't quantify what the savings will be. We know they're there. And we think they're pretty big, I think, down the road. But you can't. That's not how we budget here. But if we could deal with this, look at it as a problem to be solved that we might face ourselves, and know that we had to invest in something in the future. This is one of the most important pieces of this, of education funding, and we never get to it. And we need to just stop talking about it and start putting some money there in some way, whether it's in some kind of a fund that will grow, whatever. But I think we need to recognize that it's an investment. We can't afford not to do it. Right. So I'm sorry.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, just a question. Wouldn't based on what Senator Bonhoff said, wouldn't it be a fundamental shift to make kindergarten 1.0 and yet make the money that we're funneling to K-12 available for 3 and 4 year olds? I mean, I think that's a significant change from practice, because typically, although early childhood is in the education budget, it's specifically a different area, and we're kind of mixing the pot of money here. And I think that might not be a very good practice, which doesn't say there's no value to early education. It just says, are we going to get into mixing that funding stream and creating a problem?
Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, we discussed that issue because it
was a concern that we'd be setting precedent, but the way that it's drafted, and I worked with Mr. Nauman to draft that language so that we would be protected in terms of that, is that it's saying that it's just with board discretion, and that I'm sorry, if you could... Okay, page 95. Let me get to the actual wording.
Senator Bonoff, I think it'd be on page 96.
Okay. So it's saying the board chooses to reallocate the revenue under Subdivision 1A. The district may use the revenue to provide early childhood education programs for children aged 3 to 4. And we do understand that that is a change, but yet we know that the school districts want local control and that they've all identified early childhood education as a need, and not all school districts can and are ready to do all-day kindergarten. And so we heard this in our subcommittee, and we did talk about that this is a change, and we agreed that it was a change worth making.
Sure. Senator Wieger.
That completes my overview of the bill. I would stand for questions. Before that, I'd like to thank staff for all their efforts, and this was put together during the past week, and prior to that, to all of you senators for your input, particularly to the policy committee for their work on the subcommittees, and this is a reflection of that effort.
Okay, great. Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Wieger. Can I go back to Article 2 and this whole section about growth-based value-added systems? I'm trying to page 29. It starts sort of the mandated part of it. It looks like to me that it requires our assessment system to be converted to this new way of doing things. And I'm trying to, could you just give us a real quick highlight? What does that really mean? And what is it going to require?
Senator Rummel, the author will.
Senator Rummel.
It doesn't change the system at all. It changes the report card. On the report card, at the top of the report card, we report proficiency according to the No Child Left Behind provisions. So that's there, the scores and all the stuff and the annual yearly progress. This adds another measure. In statute, we've had for a long time multiple measures, and this is a measure based on growth. The No Child Left Behind looks at apples and oranges. This one looks at apples and apples and watches the progress of children over time. That's all that is.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson.
On page 30, that makes sense to me. That's a very good reform. I'm trying to understand the additional, there's additional language about school safety and students' relationships and those kinds of things. How do those fit into that?
There's two other measures.
Senator Rummel.
Because the growth model can only serve grades 4 to 8, what do you do to give a multiple measure for the high school? So in the high school, the P16 group, national groups, everybody is saying the best way to predict, because we're asking our high schools to make sure kids are ready for college or work. So the best way to predict their readiness is to track their course taking. So that's in there. And then the third thing came from our number of research in general says that when students are engaged, we also heard this at that growth and justice thing that they had, that student engagement, which means that, you know, is there somebody in the school that you can talk to? Do you have friends at school? Now, this third thing on student engagement is not developed. We had one sample that we looked at, but that's not the one we're going to use. All the third section is asking for is that the commissioner convene a group to look at a student engagement measure.
All right,
and
Senator
then we
Hand.
Hope that all the stakeholders will have their views in on that, because we do know that
Senator
if
students,
Senator Wieger talked to us about the number of kids that drop out, and they drop out somewhere between grades 9 and 11. And if we can keep students in school, so he's got kind of the rule that says you have to stay in school. This is a way of looking at the schools and saying, You know, are they engaged? Is there a reason for that? Do they feel there's a reason to be there? And so it's looking at two sides of the same coin. We can't afford to lose 11% of our students to dropping out.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman, and members of this committee that are also on the policy committee. Remember that we had, I think, three pretty lengthy hearing opportunities on the provisions of this section. And I just want to ask Senator Rummel, I know that when we finally passed it on, I had understood that there was going to be some continued work on this. I know that the department has not been supportive of this. They support the idea, but I think there are concerns about some of the, I guess, technical ways to accomplish measuring growth and so forth. And I don't want to get into a discussion of trichotomous whatever the I don't think this is the right time for that. But I just, Senator Rummel, is the department now, has there been any changes in this? Are they on board with this now? Are there still concerns that they have that need to be maybe addressed? Or where, can you tell us where this is at?
Senator Hand, I was just going to invite the department up for some brief comments about, you know, what they wanted to share. And then if there's anybody from out of town that wanted to testify on this, and then any organizations that wanted to make a comment. So the department, someone here from the department? Okay, Michelle Weber.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee,
welcome.
Thank you for inviting me up to speak about the department's view on the bill.
If you could give your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Michelle Weber. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. And would like to thank Senator Wieger and the Education Policy Committee for the hard work they've done over this session. We do have some significant concerns with the bill. As you know, in this committee, we are facing a 4% budget cut as recommended by the governor to our agency. We're concerned about the number of advisory committees that are in the bill and the impact that that will have on our work that we have to get done at the agency. We also would like to see some of the new initiatives more closely linked to some of the current initiatives that we have going on to address some of these issues, which we feel would be a perhaps more cost-effective approach, both from the district's perspective as well as the department's perspective, rather than asking new things of districts, new plans, et cetera, of districts, to allow some of these improvements to link to current plans that we're already asking, and perhaps we could improve processes that we already have going on. With respect to the report card bill, we maintain our current concerns with that. We are concerned about whether or not the accelerated growth is enough to get us to have students be proficient when they graduate from high school. And we also are concerned about the value-added language that has been taken out of the bill.
Okay. Very good. Senator Saxon.
Quick question?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the Online Advisory Council, Online Learning Advisory Council, that you had some concerns with some of them. In terms of online learning, how many students are enrolled in online learning in the state of Minnesota right now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, if I could please invite Assistant Commissioner Karen Klinzing up here to perhaps respond, or Dr. Melcher, they are. I'm sorry, unfortunately, we don't have that information available, but we will get that to you.
That'll be fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Anyone, any organizations that would like to, or Dr. Melcher? Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair, apparently there is someone here from the Online Advisory Council or an association that could perhaps answer that question for Senator Saxog.
All right. Please come forward. You could give your name for the record, please.
I'm Dr. Jessica Wiley. I'm the chair of the State Online Learning Advisory, and I'm also the director of educational services for Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District. there are, the question was how many students are enrolled. There are 22 approved state providers, and there are a little over 5,000 students who participated in online learning through those 22 providers. But there are also school districts that are providing online learning within their own programs that are not certified to be statewide providers. Excuse me. And there are students enrolled in those online courses also. So the State Department keeps track of the students that are enrolled in their certified, with the certified providers.
Do you have any idea of how many would not be certified, or students that would not be certified?
No.
Okay.
Because they're reported through the regular MARS report as students. For instance, if there are students in a school district like Roseville is not a statewide provider, if there were students taking an online course through the Roseville School District, they would just be reported on the regular MARS report as taking an English course or whatever course it was. The only districts that apply to be state online learning providers are those that want to allow students that are not from their school district to register. If you're only going to serve students in your own school district, you don't have to get statewide certification.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wiley, appreciate the work that you do. So how many people in the Department of Education are working directly now with online learning?
The State Department has an online learning specialist, and she works on online learning, and she also has responsibilities for PSEO.
Okay, so that one. So,
right.
Okay. Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just curiosity, the 5,000 students that are enrolled in online learning, is that their full curriculum, or do they just take some subjects in online learning and the rest probably in the building?
There's a variety. Sorry, thank you. you can either take courses full-time. You could be in we have a number of full-time programs in the state. A couple are charter schools. And you can take your full complement of courses and get your degree through that program. And then there's supplemental, where kids are taking up to 12, John? To 12 credits if you're in a supplemental program, can be online.
Okay, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair and ma'am, is there, I believe that this advisory committee is set to sunset, and this would provide for an extension of it. Do you believe that the work of the advisory committee is complete, or what would be the reason or the need for its continuance?
The advisory really hopes to be able to continue their discussions, and online learning is exploding, and it's definitely going to provide some new ways of looking at instruction and at curriculum, and it, not just for kids that are taking a full online learning course, but classroom teachers should be having what we're calling blended or hybrid courses where they're using online along with the regular instruction. And so we see this as a direction that's going to really change things in the future. And the advisory is exploring all of those kinds of questions, including what is attendance? What's truancy when you're taking a course online? What's quality? What's teacher quality? What kind of licensure issues are being presented when you can take something online? So I think that the advisory has done some really good, hard thinking about this, and it would be beneficial to have them continue to meet.
Can you TiVo online courses?
Can you TiVo them?
Record them and then, you know, in the evening play them back?
Well, they're online, so you can always access them. You don't even need to record them. Okay. They're there.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, the doctor, who do you advise, and what are the nature of the recommendations that you make to whoever you are advising?
Mr. Chair.
Are you making recommendations? Because you've mentioned that you talk about these things and you consider and there's all these ideas out there, but you know, what substantive thing do you do in relation to recommendations and to whom?
Ms. Weiland.
Mr. Chair.
The legislation asks us to report to the commissioner, and so we are making recommendations to the commissioner. Karen Johnson is the online learning specialist, and she attends the meetings and gets a lot of support in terms of direction through the conversations we have at the meetings, but we report directly to the commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else that would like to? Ms. Schwab?
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we appreciate this opportunity to share some of our bills. One of our first most exciting points was walking into the hearing room and hearing the chairman talk about the trust fund lands and the deposit that presently goes into the general fund, returning that back to the students of Minnesota. That has been a passion that the school districts around the state have really shared this year with lots of help from everybody on it, especially Senator Wieger. And it's something we value very high, not only for just the transfer of the money, but for those funds to possibly grow. And I ran across a report from the DNR probably within the last 3 days that said some of the mining opportunities over the next 10 years could actually net out $1.8 billion. So, Mr. Chairman, if there's a good time to buy, now's a good time to buy. So we appreciate that piece on you. We have some concerns about the number of advisory task forces. There's quite a few in here, and we'd really ask the committee to consider which ones are the most important. We're excited to see the charter leave piece, which would mean all teachers would be treated the same way in how they take leave from a public school. And last but not least, I want to leave you with one thought. I was able to serve on the Special Education Task Force, and I know we have an amendment coming on that subject. And it was a really difficult 7 days when you had advocates and school people on it for the one reason our mission was to find out what we needed to throw out of the special education law. Well, advocates all around the room feel very passionately about their subject, and if they feel there's one child in the state that's benefiting from that rule, they're going to be very hesitant to put it away. And I'd like to suggest, members, that instead of that committee telling you what should be thrown away, left aside, maybe the charge should be more positive. What should be kept and why? And then at least you don't have that adversarial piece going on in the meeting, and we can still get to the heart of the information you're looking for without individuals and groups feeling threatened about how their children and the services they receive are going to be impacted. So we'd like to keep that in mind as you go forward, too. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Schwab. Please give your name for the record.
My name is Mary Kirchhoff, and I'm the literacy coordinator of the Edina Public Schools, and I'd like to address some of the literacy portions of the bill.
Okay. Please go ahead.
In the Edina schools, I'm a licensed special education teacher, a licensed reading teacher, and a licensed elementary teacher. And I currently work as a teacher on special assignment as the elementary language arts specialist, as the birth through 12 literacy coordinator. I coordinate the targeted services, mentor new reading teachers, and mentor our literacy coaches. And I'm here today because I'm concerned about the literacy provisions in there interfering or impacting the work of the current Board of Teaching and the Language Arts Review that the Department of Education will be conducting next year. When we look at the five areas of scientifically based reading in the bill, school districts are using those to teach children to read, and we are concerned about that as well. The Edina Public Schools recently conducted an extensive review of all the strategies, skills, and programs that we used, and our benchmark was, is it scientifically based? When we are looking at RTI, response to intervention being implemented across our schools, it's critically important that school districts do that, but we are. And I believe that the language in this bill would constrain the work of the Language Arts Committee next year and is covered through the current Board of Teaching work. You know, when I work with elementary teachers and professionals on how to reach all young learners in the Edina schools, and I also work with colleagues from other school districts, one of the things that we do when we look at good reading instruction is we look at studying it, looking at what individual children are doing. We look very deeply at the data. We look at our school's strategic plans and align with those with the data from what the children are doing in reading. And then we instruct. And when children are struggling in that instruction, and I've spent 34 years passionately advocating for children that struggle, I am trained in many of the reading methods that drove people to write this into rule. I support some of them for some children. But not all children need those. And if we present our reading instruction in that narrow band, we will alienate a whole nother group of children that do not need that kind of instruction. So I'm asking you to let the Board of Teaching and the Commissioner of Education and the Department of Ed continue the work they're doing. And it seems like the Department of Ed was also saying that if you can allow some of this work to be merged into the existing work. Those groups also pull in many stakeholders. I know the last time the rule went through the department, Language Arts was reviewed when Dr. Yecky was commissioner. There were sessions held all over the state where we were able to testify and give input. Parents, community members, taxpayers, researchers, and teachers. We need that kind of scrutiny on something as important as reading, and the Board of Teaching has pulled that together. So given that, I'm asking you to delete these portions and let the Language Arts Review next year and the current Board of Teaching work continue and progress. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, I think the reference was to page 39.
Here, I can, yeah. And, Article 2.
41.
Section 19 on page 35. Page 64. The reading test, I should address that. Right now, there's no research that shows taking a reading test improves the instruction of teachers. And I'm concerned about the cost of that assessment to the young teachers that are already coming through school. I do think teachers should be accountable. I took the I'm a reading teacher, and I took the Praxis reading test to get my license. But the level of degree of sophistication, being a reading specialist, is different. I'd ask you to look at the broad range that teachers need to know, and know that the change in teaching in Minnesota is not going to come from pre-service teachers taking a test. It's going to come through professional development that's also embedded in here and looks great. Okay.
Right, Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, one of the things that we've heard repeatedly about tests is that people teach to a test. So that if something is important, then you test it. You test for it. So that emphasis is put on that subject area. And I think that's what the effort is here, is we're saying that teaching reading is probably the most important thing that an elementary teacher can do. And so we want to make sure that as teachers are being trained, that they're being taught a variety of ways to do that so that all students can be successful. And if it takes a test to assure that that happens, then I think that it's probably worth the effort. Because I think there's a lot of us that are concerned that is not being emphasized enough in teacher training. And so if we're very specific that we're going to test specifically for that, then some more emphasis will have to be placed in that area.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'm sorry that I didn't clarify what my objection to the testing would be. My objection to the testing that's mentioned in this bill is that it would not be aligned with the changes in the language arts standards next year. And in the school districts, we really do take those standards as our marching orders on what we teach children. And so we need to align any test with the standards in the state so that we're in alignment and that is comprehensive. And I believe the Board of Teaching is currently looking at that.
Okay, Senator Olson. And then do you want to respond to, this? Please give your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Karen Klinzing, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. We've reviewed this language and worked with Senator Saltzman on it. We don't believe that it'll compromise the review of the language arts standards next year, nor the work of the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education on any of the language arts reviews that we're doing.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely, there's no intent here to interrupt or bypass the Board of Teaching in their work. People have been very active and involved in the development of new reading standards, and both Senator Saltzman and I have attended stakeholders' meetings as the task force findings and recommendations have been presented. The reality is that in terms of the setting of standards, the legislature does have a role. And we have exercised that role beginning about 8 years ago in terms of some direction that what the National Reading Panel has done with a broad array of research that's been done in this area has acknowledged that for effective reading instruction that you need to have all five strands. And there's been some folks that have done kind of dug into what is fact is being taught in teacher preparation programs to the point of reading all of the syllabi, four courses from 28 institutions, and were quite dismayed as to what they saw, because in many of these areas there was clearly an inadequate amount of time and energy being spent in some of these areas. And so if you want to look at our legislation in any way at all, it is a fact that we do have an interest. We do have an interest in how teachers are being prepared. We want our teachers to be successful in achieving success in reading for all students. But our primary responsibility, the one that's often least represented over here, are the students themselves and the parents who are coping with the situations they have, particularly when they're trying to work with our public system, and even hearing teachers that saying, I was never prepared to instruct in a way that would help my child learn to read. Literacy is a much broader concept. None of us are arguing with that. None of us are arguing that everything has to be focused on one area or another of those five strands. But I don't think that there's anywhere that there's been evidence that anybody is damaged by learning through all of those five strands. Obviously, having grown up with an elementary teacher and have spent a lot of time in elementary classrooms and watched the work that goes on there, teachers are, if there's ever a group of teachers that is good at recognizing some of the differing needs of their students, it's elementary teachers. And they have, I call it a three-ring circus, but it's not really that. It's, you know, they've organized in groups depending on who catches it fast and can move on versus who needs more help in this area, whether they call them bluebirds, redbirds, or sparrows, or whatever. These are all parts of the whole process of working with a very diverse group of students, which has always been the case. And all we're saying is that we want to be sure that our teachers are equipped with the strategies and the skills to work with their students, and we want them to have the very best, because we don't want to have parents feel that they have to leave the system to find the help for their children, because the ones that are successful are ones that have means. And so many of them that are here that have been working with us are here from a standpoint of social justice, that there's a lot that do not have those means, and we are still, you know, Minnesota, we're so good. We are good in education, but there's an awful lot of our young people that are not gaining proficiency in reading by the end of second grade. So we are not standing against the rules. We've been working with the Board of Teaching, and on the assessment, we believe that this particular assessment that we've been watching and observe and studying is one that is aligned with those with the reading panel recommendations, which is consistent with the statute that we have and have had in place for a number of years. So it's hard for me to understand how it could be not aligned with the standards. If the standards that are going to be put in place come out of this task force and they're put into rule, we are already working on the notion. This doesn't have to be a standalone test. The board already acknowledges that the current test that they're using is inadequate. There's 10 questions out of 120 that are on reading instruction. And the reality is somebody could fail, every one of those wrong, and could still get licensure. And that just isn't acceptable to those of us that believe that those first years are the very most important thing that they can learn up through grade two is how to read. And so that's where we're coming from. And if this ends up being, after it has been tried without consequence, essentially, for the first couple of years, that then we can look at not only what scores there might be, but whether there needs to be some adaptation of the test that would allow it to be sure that it's measuring what we want to measure here in Minnesota by the standards that we have been setting. So that's what that's all about. And if anything, this legislation is kind of walking alongside and giving a good nudge, and in some cases a wake-up call, to our teacher education institutions and, you know, perhaps to the Board of Teaching, that we're here to support them in doing the right thing, the expectation that we have set as legislators and policymakers, which is our responsibility that we're elected to do.
Ms. Palmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Since the task, Board of Teaching has been raised here as a variable in this important discussion, I thought I would briefly provide a few comments. As you know, the Board of Teaching has oversight over all teacher preparation and licensure requirements. As such, they develop rules that consist of standards for every licensure field. The ones that we're talking about today, in particular, I believe, are the elementary and early childhood licensure areas. There is not currently a specific reading test, but rather the test reflects what's in the rules, those standards in the rules. And as Senator Olson said, she's accurate that the standards are not currently sufficient to really dive down deeply into the reading proficiencies that teachers need to be prepared to do. And as such, the test does not reflect that. So certainly some of our institutions of higher education have gone far beyond what's in those standards currently, but what's in rule and what's in standards and then the test that reflects those standards is deficient, and we concede that, and that's exactly why we created a task force a year ago to begin working on this. So we have been working. We believe that we are very close to a strong product. We have been working closely with the senators who have been passionate about this this matter and others. There are many with great passion around this area. We have appreciated the opportunity to work collaboratively on this effort, and we're going to continue to do so. We believe that between statute and new rules and new tests that will come as a result of new rules, we will end up with a very, very strong infrastructure for reading preparation for all teachers in the state of Minnesota. So we look forward to the continued collaborative efforts, and we thank you for your willingness to partner with us.
Senator Salzman.
Yes, There's a lot of passion around this, and I appreciate the discussion, but just briefly, one of my greatest disappointments is that the response has been that we are limiting reading instruction, and I think that the arguments against what we're doing, that we need to be broader, is exactly what we're doing, is that we're concerned that teachers don't have every tool in their tool belt early enough, and from visiting, you know, school districts around the state with the Education Policy Committee, we've heard repeatedly from school districts the amount of effort that goes into preparing very new teachers in these strategies and works with RTI. And that's our effort, is to say, you know, we're spending millions of dollars. We heard stories of school districts having to work with higher ed institutions outside of this state because they couldn't find partners in Minnesota. That's very disturbing to us. So we've really gotten people's attention on this. But the bottom line is I'm not representing anyone except the 60% of kids who aren't proficient in reading in fourth grade on the NAEP tests. And those are the stories that we hear. We hear from parents who have had to go outside our public schools to find tutoring so their children could achieve. And they sat at this table right here and said money and luck should not determine if a child learns to read. Because these parents had the means to go out and find tutors, had the ability to drive their children. We need to make sure that our public schools, that our teachers have this preparation. We know that staff development is ongoing. We absolutely support that. But that's kind of why we're here and why the parents who work with us have nothing to gain from this. They don't want another child, another family, to experience the pain that they had when they saw that their children could not read.
Thank you. And Ms. Smith? Thank you. Stacy Smith? Stacia, I'm sorry.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman Stumpf and committee members. My name is Stacia Smith, for the record, with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber is the state's largest business advocacy organization, representing over 2,700 members. And I just want to thank Senator Weger for bringing this bill together. I know it's taken a lot of work. I just have two concerns that I want to discuss with you all. The first is the ballot language change that's on page 8, lines 8.23 through 8.26. Our concern is that we really want this ballot language to be accurate, and there's a couple I'm not sure this is necessarily accurate. The language does not make it clear that if the referendum is voted down, property taxes would decrease. It also does not reflect change in pupil counts, change in tax base, change in dollar amount of the levy, and so we would just bring that to your concern because that might be something we want to take a closer look at. And the second part is the growth model, which I've already testified on that in the policy committee, so some of you have already heard those concerns. But just to reiterate for those of you who haven't, the Chamber is not opposed to the growth model at all, but this model does have a couple of concerns for us. The first is that this model tells parents about their school performance compared to the state norm. It does not tell parents whether the state norm is a good score or not. And second, this model fails to show whether students will ever be proficient in terms of the standards. This was an issue we brought up, as I said before, in the policy committee. Our understanding was that this was going to be dealt with between Senator Rummel and the department and Dr. Heistad, and my understanding is that this has not been addressed yet. So this is a big concern for us. Again, we support growth models, and we would like to see that we maintain high standards and expectations that are directly tied to our academic standards. One part of the growth model that I do want to point out is that on page 63, there is an educational report card growth model document for 2008 that no one, to my understanding, has seen yet. So we would like to work with Senator Rummel, Dr. Heistad, and others to understand what exactly this document is. It seems to be an important component to this model, yet, as my understanding, no one has seen it. Okay. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. Members, I know the questions can, we can generate a lot of questions. We have about 5 minutes before session. So I would like to get as much out as possible and then have members and whoever's raising the issues kind of visit about that stuff. So if we can keep the questions to a minimum and maybe those of you who want to raise issues, please let us know so you can bring those up. Who had a question? Senator Rummel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The growth model, first of all, the report, we have to look at the report card as having, first we have really two report cards. We have a report card that goes home with the children, and on that report card, the graph will show where they need to be in order to meet proficiency, and it will also show how they are progressing toward that. So the individual report card that goes home does address the parents' need for that information. On a macro level,
on the level that goes to the public. The public has been saying to us, we want multiple measures. We want to look at the school from different lenses. We do not, for example, make high-stakes decisions about our economy simply based on the employment rate or the CPI. We look at multiple measures and we make some decisions about it. On the public report card, we have the proficiency model that's been generated by the department, fully intact. It remains there. And what we add is three different measures. The growth model that we're adding is a value-added model based on student performance from 1 year to the next year. I think the commissioner and folks are concerned about the word norm, because you have to find out what the average growth is across the state for all students, and then we show whether students are whether schools, because now you're not talking about the individual school, show if a school, what percent of the students are growing at that rate, what percent of the students are growing faster than that rate. That's a different measure. It's not based on the MCAs, okay? And that's all it is. It's looking at what's going on in the schools two different ways. And the commissioner and the folks that I'm working with on this, we haven't come to perfect agreement. The folks that do the, or they call themselves psychometricians for our schools, have been working. They've been on the commissioner's accountability task force, whatever it's called, a work group, for a long, long time. We were told early on, and this is why this is so surprising to me, that what we were doing was not incompatible. But it was useful for the public. All this deals with is what we are reporting to the public. We are giving the public one more, we're really giving them three more pieces of information. We're not hiding anything. We're not looking away from anything. And the value of this particular growth model is that we can see really quickly which schools, for example, are achieving high growth and high achievement, which schools are achieving low achievement but high growth. We want to see what's going on in those schools. We can see it almost instantly with the data we have without generating new data. We go and look at those schools and say, okay, what are you doing? Because these are the schools where the low-achieving schools, this is what we need to know. What's going on in the ones that are high-achieving, even the high growth, even though they're low-achieving, so that we can translate that. So that's all this does. It adds a measure that looks at schools differently than simply based on the MCAs.
Members, there's only a couple minutes left before session. Let me suggest that there's a lot in here, and again, the process next week will be to try to have a very good discussion on Thursday, both in the morning and plan on an evening meeting, and then that this committee would pass, deal with
Mr. Chair, I understand that you were going to try to pass recommendation out Thursday night.
So on Thursday night, we'd like to finalize everything because they need it in finance on Friday. So, and I know Senator Anderson, you're a finance chair too, so I think there's going to be a lot of hours put in next week trying to pull everything together, but there's a lot of material here, and not all of it is agreed upon. So we'll try to send it through some filters for fiscal costs, for mandates, for good policy. Hopefully we can all come to an agreement on that, and then also members, please keep in mind that if we can come up and do that trust fund proposal. That would be a real help, I think, that we could go home and say, here's one positive thing that we laid out. Well, there's a lot of positive things, but one financial positive thing. So, and then there'll be an opportunity for those that didn't have a chance to testify now to testify. But I would encourage anyone who has a concern or an issue to talk to those members. As Senator Wieger pointed out, there's a lot of individual legislators that have had fingerprints and everything in here. They've worked on different parts of it. So talk to those individual members as well. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just was wondering, we've had some discussion about the governor's thoughts on the dealing with the budget, and I'm wondering, is the committee going to be bringing forward any other proposals that would pertain to the education part of the budget, or is there going to be another proposal brought to the committee before we have to finalize the budget?
Senator Hand, yes. We will have, it's not finalized, but we will have a portion dealing with, our portion dealing with the overall budget.
Okay.
So Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, do you see the fiscal, are you combining that with this bill, or do you envision that being separate as an overall budget one, and would you envision the things that have fiscal impact in this bill as being moved into that one and keeping this strictly policy, or do you envision ones a certain amount of it being able to stay with the policy bill?
Senator Olson, I don't think that has been finalized at this point. There's been a range of discussions, I think, between the leadership in the House and Senate, everything from, you know, one bill containing finance and taxes, which would be a strange combination, but one proposal to a number of proposals, and that's still being worked out. I think it's safe to say, though, that anything that has a fiscal impact would be addressed in the finance area. Now, whether that's one bill or whether it's, you know, several bills, we haven't had the directive yet to abandon policy, you know, like there'd be a separate policy bill. You know, we're trying to keep options open that's a possibility. And that's very difficult for staff because, I mean, when you direct staff to go one way and then all of a sudden, you know, we got to take that out and stuff. So we're trying to be cognizant of the time. It's a very tight time frame, and that's why I laid out those principles about not being over energetic about doing too many things this particular year, because I think our main objective this year is to try to solve the budget deficit, bonding, and, you know, a number of other things, transportation funding, things like that. So, all right, committee is adjourned, and we'll be meeting next on Wednesday. We'll be meeting with the caucuses, and so I need to talk to Senator Olson. On Thursday, we'll have our regular time in the morning and then an evening to finalize everything, and then pass it out so that it can go to finance on Friday. Committee is adjourned.
We're meeting Tuesday.
Oh, we're not meeting Tuesday.